Well, now that I've got all of your ambitious juices flowing, what are you going to do with all those? And I am going to finish the last talk of this with an argument that you should start a business. And if you've already started a business, you should think bigger about your business. If you've not started a business, it's time. If you're a young person, whether you're going to be a hedge farmer or a hog farmer, I'll be honest, the first business I started, I got an Amway business, and I made a bunch of money until I ran out of friends, and then I stopped doing Amway. So you can do any number of things, even as a young person, whether it's mowing lawns. I wouldn't recommend selling flies and wasps to your siblings, but it's an idea. You want to think it through. The U.S. Small Business Administration says that 40% of businesses don't make it to their second birthday. You're like, okay, so cool. You just told me to start something that I have a 40% chance of failing within 2 years. And that is actually, if you look at businesses that actually make it to their fifth birthday or their 10th birthday, there are very few businesses that actually survive. Something like 600,000 businesses close every year in America. That should be sobering. And you do want to ask yourself, okay, is that really the thing that I want to do? Now, I'm going to put one caveat, and then I will never add this caveat again throughout this talk. Not everyone is been given the gifts, skills, and ability to start a billion-dollar technology business, right? We're not all built the same. We're all different members of the body of Christ, and that's okay. You need to strive for where God has gifted you, and you need to be ambitious where God has gifted you, and don't try and be someone that you are not, okay? That's the one caveat that I'm going to put on that. But it is really hard to think about, shoot, I'm going to go start a business, really? And I'm going to put a nasty word on why a lot of people don't, and it's cowardice, because you have a chance of losing. You have a chance of failing, and failing very publicly, right? Let's say you start a donut shop in Lynchburg, and you go out of business, and you close. Is that embarrassing? Yeah, it is. So what, right? Remember, God cares more about the players than the score, and so you need to be thinking a lot bigger than just yourself, and that might just be a selfish ambition. If you're doing that just to glorify your name, and then you're afraid what people are going to think of you if you do a bad job, then that's a selfish ambition. If you're doing it as a godly ambition, I encouraged a group of men in Texas. They're like, you know, we have this bookstore, coffee shop idea, but it might fail. Like, just go do it. And if it fails, it fails. And in the history of the world, everyone is going to totally forget that your coffee shop or your donut shop failed. Right? It's just, get over yourself. Right? And you might not be doing that just because you're being cowardice. So, but there are a lot of very practical things that you need to think through when you are going to start a business. Okay? So, I want to give you some practical things, because remember I talked about set really big goals, be super ambitious, but have a plan. So, this talk is how to have a plan. I would recommend also, if you've never started a business before, this talk will be great. There's some great books that you should be reading. Something like The Lean Startup, I would recommend. Very practical book, but I would also read it right next to Zero to One, which is Peter Thiel's book, because Zero to One kind of captures the creativity that's needed to create something from nothing, right? When I started Red Balloon, it was like nothing existed, and now we have 35 employees, we have millions of job seekers, but it was this kind of, that Zero to One, that is a really hard step. And so Zero to One captures the creativity. The Lean Startup captures the mechanics of how you do a business. So if you are thinking about starting a business, I would actually read those two books together. There's a lot of great business books. Good to Great is a phenomenal book, but is really for a mature business. How do you go to the next level? But I would recommend, if you're only going to read two business books, read those two and read them together, because otherwise you'll get a sideways view of how to start a business. So let's start with just being real practical. You're going to start a business. You need to have a why of where you're going to start a business, because it's going to be miserable and it's going to be really, really hard in all the right ways. There is, if you guys know the book, Start With Why, who's the author of that? I'm drawing a blank right now. Simon Sinek, yes. And he basically talks about great businesses start with why they're doing something rather than what they're doing or how they're doing it. Okay, so you kind of think of these concentric circles. So Apple, back when the Steve Jobs era, started with, I want to create beautiful products. And by the way, those products are going to play music and make people's lives better, and they look a lot like computers and iPads and iPods, right? So he started with why. I want to create beautiful products. Companies that are just like, I'm going to create computers, that's not a why, that's a what. And then they go into the how of like, well, how am I going to create computers? Well, I'm going to offshore and I'm going to try and have really efficient. And then why are you doing it? I don't know. I want to make money. That's going the wrong direction. You need to start with a why. And the good things is Christians, and that's an interesting book. It's or you could just go on YouTube. I think there's like a 13-minute synopsis that he gives of the book. It's actually, get you, don't read the book. It's fine. Watch the YouTube. You're going to save yourself a lot of time. But Christians have the best why. Well, why would we start a business? Why are we trying to do this? At Red Balloon, my why was, okay, so I just had to leave MZ. What if all of the business, all of the people at MZ, there's a vaccine mandate and they all have to quit? Or there's some like super woke, you have to deny Christ in public. I don't know, you know, something crazy, and they all have to quit. Well, I now have hundreds of my friends in this small little economy of Moscow, and there's not other jobs for them to get. So what was my why? I need to create a technology that allows the companies around the country who are looking for awesome employees to be able to find my people if they have to lose their job. That was my why. Okay, now how am I going to do that? Okay, well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to create a job board. Sure, why not? Let's do that, right? And so you kind of work out from the why. So as a Christian, when you're thinking about your business, when you're thinking, how am I going to start my business? What am I going to do? Always start with why. Simon Sinek had just really good insights in this, even if he's not a Christian. And Christians should have a huge leg up. We serve the Creator God. We're trying to bless people out in our community, out in our society. Starting with why is the easiest thing. And that can be, you know, a welding business. That can be that donut shop. Why are you doing your donut shop? If your why is to make money, you're going to fail at some point. They did a study of people who survived the longest in POW camps. And yes, starting a business is a little bit like a POW camp. So the people that survived in those POW camps, the ones who did the best had someone at home that they were trying to live for, right? Someone who didn't have that and they were just living for themselves, they tapped out pretty quick. But when you're like, no, I have a wife I need to get to, I have kids I want to see, that's how I want to survive this horrible experience, they did significantly better than people who didn't have something outside of themselves to live for. And so that's what your why has to be. What am I actually fundamentally trying to accomplish that's bigger than me, outside of me, that is going to bless people in my community, that is going to drive jobs? You know, think about one of the big things we started with at MZ. Like, how do we have 50-50? We want to drive prosperity in the town of Moscow. That was our why. That's what we started with. And that actually gives you an enormous amount of clarity when you're trying to start a business. So always start with why. Know why you're doing the thing and have a why that is way bigger than you. Does that make sense? Okay? So that's how you should always start when you're thinking of a business. And the point of your life is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And you are doing that by conforming to His image. And so that is also going to help drive your why. How do Christians, your why might be as simple as, I want to create a business that gives me the capacity to give away $1 million. Okay, we'll keep that front and center. You're probably going to need a product idea in addition to just making a lot of money so you can give a lot of money away. That's fine. But you need to think like that. That is the way that God thinks. God creates to bless us. He creates these flowers that we talked about to bless us. Okay, so now you have your why of what you're trying to do. I am trying to create the best donuts. I want to create donuts that just delight people and glorify God. Right? That's okay. That could be your why. You could say, I need to create something that the gospel is spread because this product is so good that people are like, holy moly, how do you do that? Right? I will tell you, we had a lot of non-Christians who worked at MZ, and many people, at least five of them, many is probably a stretch, at least five people came to me through the years at MZ and said, okay, why are you people so joyful? Like, what's the matter with you people? Like, you have a bad sales month and you still smile. What's the matter with you? I'm like, you know what? I'd love to grab a beer after work and talk through that. And is able to share the gospel and bring people to the Lord through that business. Well, that might be your why. Like, I want to be a business that can hire non-Christians. You got to be careful. There's critical mass and there's all kinds of things. So I can spread the gospel. Okay, that's great. Well, that should be the heart of your business. And you need to keep that front and center. Again, you're in a POW camp, which is entrepreneurship, and you need to know why you're doing it. And if you know why you're doing it, it's going to give you clarity and it's going to give you stamina. When I talk to people who want to be entrepreneurs, I say the most important character quality that you could ever have as an entrepreneur is stamina, because there will be lots and lots of days where you feel like there is no way that I'm going to be able to pull this off. And I will tell you, even at Red Balloon, you feel like, I am an entrepreneur, I've done this before. Holy moly, the number of times I'm like, why am I doing this? I could just, you know, be playing golf. I don't need the money. Why am I doing this? And that's where you need to have that why. If I needed to rescue people from these woke work environments and put them in a spot where they can glorify God and live their values out loud. So have your why. The next thing you need to do is you need to have a clear idea of the problem you're solving. Okay, so now we're getting, so we started with that why. Now we kind of get to the how. Okay, what is the business problem that I am solving for someone else? Because if you want to create a business because you think the world needs donuts and I want to create a great donut shop that's going to turn into a franchise and I am going to take Dunkin' Donuts down, that's your vision. Really big. It's going to be the biggest donut shop. Let's go! Dunkin' Donuts is going down. Okay, fantastic. Well, let's try and figure out, like, okay, is there demand in the market for donuts? Am I going to start this shop and find out that the market actually has all the donuts they want and people are actually trending towards weight loss and donuts are going to fail miserably and I really shouldn't go down the road of a donut shop if that is the case? So the best way to identify the product that you want to create, the thing that you want to bring to market, is look for problems. So don't look at what product I want to create, look for problems that need to be solved. Because people pay money to solve problems, right? If your neighbors all have fences that are about to fall over and they all own dogs, they have a problem, right? That sounds a lot like a business that's focused on repairing or building fences, right? So what you've done is you've started with, okay, I want to glorify God, I want to create business, I want to whatever that is. Okay, what's the problem that I need to solve? Well, look for problems around you. You can even look at problems you have in your own life. Like, man, I hate my email. Okay, well, I do. That's a problem. Okay, is that a problem that I can solve, and is it a problem that other people have? So look for problems. And you'll find that when you get going in a business, you start by, I need to solve a problem, and can I solve it at scale? Are there other people that have this problem? If there are, that's maybe a business. You'll need to know that as you continue to grow your business, all you will do is find problems. We're in a fallen world. That's how it works. You are going to find problem after problem after problem. And I've had a lot of executives who worked for me be like, I am so discouraged. I feel like we're finding problems everywhere all the time. Like, yeah, that's the point of business. You're going to find problems. You're going to solve problems. You're going to do it when you start your business. You're going to do it as you grow your business. That's just the way the fallen world works. Find problems and solve problems. So find a problem out there that either you have or lots of other people have, right? So think about, what are the problems that I see? What are the things that are very frustrating to me that use a lot of time that I wouldn't want to spend? What is that problem that I can solve? And then, now that you've identified the problem, all products are simply solving a problem. So what do I do at Red Balloon? The problem is conservative Christian businesses don't know how to find conservative Christian employees, and employees can't find businesses that align with their values. Ta-da, that's the problem. Do a lot of people have that? Yes, a lot of people have that. Okay, now, so you've got a why. What am I trying to accomplish? I've identified the problem that people have. Now what am I going to do about it? And that's where your solution comes from. I've seen a lot of businesses fail because they start with a solution. I'm going to create a cool app that does X. So what? I'm going to create a lawn mowing business in Antarctica. Probably a bad idea, right? Just because you have an idea doesn't mean you have a why of what you're trying to accomplish or a problem you're trying to solve for someone else, right? Does that make sense? The best businesses start and move out that way rather than saying, I've got a cool app. Can I find anybody who wants to buy it? That is a great way to fail at business. Does it make sense? And it's this very external, like, I want to solve other people's problems. I want to have a why that is driven by a Christian worldview. And if I build the business that way, then you're solving real problems people have, and they'll pay you money for it. Ta-da! Doesn't seem that complicated, but a lot of people start with their great, brilliant idea rather than starting with an obsession around customer problems that they want to solve. And it's so funny because that's how God built the world. When you focus on other people, when you think about other people first, you're going to create great businesses and great problems, or great solutions, not great problems. You're going to create, but if you start with thinking about yourself, I've got this brilliant idea, I'm the smartest person ever, that might be selfish ambition, and guess what? Your business is going to fail. Does that make sense? Okay, it's really straightforward. Start with why you're going to do it. You're going to need that. You're going to need to hold on to that as you continue to grow. You're going to move out and say, okay, what are the biggest problems that I can find that other people have that maybe I have as well? And then can I come up with a creative solution that nobody else has thought of? And it's funny because the businesses that make the most money are boring businesses, right? I've talked to so many kids who wanted to create the killer app because they saw Snapchat or whatever it is. They're like, man, I'm going to create an app and make $1 billion. Well, you're not, because you're starting with your big idea out here. Here's a concept, especially for you kids. Porta-potty guys make all the money. Okay? Remember that. Porta-potty guys make all the money. Because who wants to be a porta-potty guy? No one. Is there a real problem that needs to be solved? Yeah. Supply and demand. Does anybody else want to do that? Not really. So you can make a lot of money as a porta-potty guy. And start with the boring thing. And that's also a great check on selfish ambition as opposed to godly ambition. Nobody who's like has this deep selfish ambition, I want to be the center of the world with the coolest business ever, is going to start a porta potty business, right? But they make really good money, right? And that's a real problem people have because no one wants to do that stuff. You could be a plumber. You could build a plumber empire because no one wants to clean out toilets and drains, right? So look for the boring stuff. And that is, again, such a great check on selfish ambition. I will tell you, a job board, which is what Red Balloon started at, is a terrible business. And I'll tell you why it's a terrible business, because a job posting is an online advertisement for employment, right? This is, you put it out there, business says, I would like to hire someone. And a lot of those businesses have terrible jobs. It's not a terrible job. We had a rope maker in Wisconsin that was looking for a rope master, didn't know that was a thing, and was paying $18 an hour in a small town in Wisconsin. And he posted this job on Red Balloon, and he called me a month in, and he's like, why don't I have lots of applicants? I'm like, well, there are like 12 rope masters in the world and none of them want to work for $18 an hour, right? And so as a job board, I had no control of their job and I had no control whether the 5 rope masters in the world saw their job. I could do my best to market it. So that's the first thing that was hard, and he was upset and so he canceled his subscription. Whereas we had another customer who had a great job, posted that sucker, got 100 applicants, hired 4 people, absolutely thrilled, also canceled their subscription because he didn't need to hire anymore. I'm like, oh, this is a terrible business to be in. So we kind of learned, you know, you learn as you go along, but and that's why we now do other things. We have recruiting services, we have an ATS, we have all these other things. But as you're growing a business, you're going to find these problems as you go along. But a job board is a boring business. It's not quite a porta potty business, but it's close. But it solved a real practical need. We have had thousands and thousands of people find jobs where they could be free, and we've seen their families transform through this terrible business that's, again, not quite a porta-potty business, but close, of just having a job board. Does that make sense? So all you young people, porta-potty businesses, it's where it's at. Find the boring thing that needs to be done and then be wildly ambitious about it, and God blesses that kind of thing. Okay, so now that you have kind of built this, you've got your why, you've got your problem, and you've got your idea for your business. The next thing you want to do is, I have had so many people give me a business plan. I hate business plans. They're usually this deck that has these apocryphal projections, like, well, in year one, I'm going to make $20. In year two, I'm going to make $20 million. In year three, I'm going to make $40 million. Do you want to invest? I'm like, no, because you're smoking weed. There's no way, right? There's no way that that's actually going to be possible. That's a business plan, and it sounds really good. I encourage people to do a business model. Okay, a business model is far less sexy. It's not in PowerPoint. It's generally in Excel. And it basically says, okay, I think I can make a product for this. It will cost me this much to make it. And here's all the costs that are associated with making that product. I have to buy it. I have to pay people. I have to have rent. I need to pay myself something because I can't just quit my job. These are all the costs that are going to be associated with it. And I think I can acquire one customer a month for the next 3 years. And based on that, I think I can make it to break even in 3 months. Well, I can now look at all those assumptions. I don't have lots of pretty pictures with crazy graphs, but I can actually see how it works. And man, when you put stuff in Excel, and I know it's not an advertisement for Excel, but I love Excel because when you put stuff in Excel, you're like, oh, there's my problem. If I only can get one customer a month, and I'm only making $1 of profit per customer, it's going to take me 728 years to build my billion-dollar business. I'm going to be dead. In fact, my kids are going to be dead. My grandkids are going to be dead. That's probably not the right solution. And so it makes you push on your assumptions in a totally different way, right? So that's what I say. You want to build a business model, not a business plan. A business plan is like, okay, big picture. We're going to do a bunch of marketing, and we're going to take over Facebook, and then Dunkin' Donuts is going down. Like, well, hold on. How are you actually going to practically do that? So build it in an Excel model. And so not a business plan, a business model. Does that make sense? If you need help with business modeling, I love doing that. Like, Excel is like my happy place. So if you need help with that, I'll leave my contact information. I'm happy to look for that. Now you need to start working out the details. And as Timothy talked about, you learn lessons about the cost of things. Because now you have a lot of assumptions built into your business model, right? You haven't spent a dime yet, unless you had to buy a computer so you could put it in Excel. You haven't spent any money. You've identified why I'm going to do this. You've identified the problem. You've got a thesis for your solution to that problem. Now you're putting some meat on those bones. Okay, now I'm going to run the numbers. Now you need to start questioning all those assumptions. Is it really only going to cost $1 to buy a new car? Probably not. Let's put in the real number. Oh, it's going to cost $30,000 to buy a truck so that I can do this. Oh, I'm not going to be profitable for 28 years. Okay, so there's something wrong here. You need to push on those assumptions. You need to assume that you're wrong before you start spending money. And this is part of, like, I want you to take risks. I want you to be ambitious. But also Proverbs says, don't extend your arm farther than you can take it back. Because I've seen a lot of people just do stupid things because they're like, okay, I'm going to start a business. I've got a killer idea. I'm going to build an app. It's going to change the world. It's going to be amazing. Okay, well, hold your horses. Spend a week actually pushing on all of your assumptions for your business model, right? Not your business plan, your business model. Is it really going to cost this much? I wonder if I could negotiate to get a better price for this specific thing that I need to build my donuts, to make my donuts, okay? I'm going to go call three different vendors and actually push on that assumption. This is hard work that's super boring work, right? When you're all full of spit and vigor and I'm going to start a business, it's going to be amazing. It is very depressing to spend time in an Excel model and be like, all my assumptions are wrong and there's no way I'm going to solve this problem. And that's when you go back to your why and be like, okay, why am I doing this again? Oh, that's right. Okay, then I need to go figure out another solution. I need to keep pushing on that. This is a very cheap way to save. It's think about it like when you're building a large building. You pay architects to do the drawing beforehand. If you're making it up as you go and your foundation's a little bit, you know, too small or too big, your building's going to fail and it's going to fall over, right? So this is your architectural stage when you're building your business. You've gone out. You've figured out all of your concentric circles. You're now starting to push on your business model and say, okay, can I actually accomplish this? There was a guy in Moscow who wanted to start a bookstore. And I'm like, okay, so let's figure out, what do you think you can do for profit per book? He's like, I think I could make $3.28 per book. I'm like, well, it's strangely specific. And that's called a false accuracy, but that's okay. $3.28. Okay, now let's look at how much does rent cost. He's like, okay, I get a great deal. It's only $1,000 a month. Okay. And how much is electricity and utilities? Oh yeah, electricity and utilities. I'm going to pay those, don't I? Yep, I'm going to pay those. Okay, great. Now let's figure it out what that costs. Okay. And are you going to pay yourself? No, I don't need to pay myself. Do you have a wife? Yes. Does she want to eat? Yeah, probably. Okay, you're going to have to pay yourself. What's the minimum that you can take in salary? Oh, I bet I could get by with $500 a month. I bet you can't. Like, let's actually think this sucker through, right? And so, okay, let's put in some money for you down here. All right, now, are you going to live at the bookstore or you're going to have an employee at some point? Oh, yeah. I'm going to, because I need to go out and acquire books to bring them to the bookstore. Okay, so you're going to need an employee because you're going to be out. You're not going to be there all the time. Or it's not going to be open very much, which means you're not going to be able to sell as much. Okay, so let's add that cost in, right? And again, I'm not trying to be depressing, but you have to think through these things. You put all these things in, and then lo and behold, you need to sell 1,500 books a month. And he's like, oh, that's a problem, because I think I could sell 100. Okay, so you're going to go out of business before you've even started, and you're going to waste a lot of money in the meantime. Now, sometimes you just need to, you know, jump in with both feet, do something stupid. But this is why we keep encouraging, have your kids do stupid things now, because it's usually pretty cheap. If you start a lawn mowing company and it fails miserably, it's a couple $100, not a couple $1,000,000, right? You need to fail on small things when you're a kid so that when you get bigger, you're still going to fail. I got a housing development. I'm $4.5 million in the hole on. So it's possible to do horrible things at scale. But this is how you want to think through that business. Okay, so now you've got your business model and you've actually started to push on those assumptions. The moral of the story for him, and I'll just tell you, is that business is now Bull Rush Books, and they took a totally pivot and said, okay, we can't just be a small community bookstore. There's no way for that to scale. We're going to get used books at scale. We're going to get these pallets of curriculum because the margin on curriculum are different, so that $3.28 was different. And we are going to recycle some books that are totally trashed, and we are going to be a used bookstore for a niche down curriculum. Well, lo and behold, Bull Rush Books in Moscow now has multiple employees and they're making money, and it's actually a viable business. But we had to push on those assumptions right off the bat because it showed that the original thesis of the business was wrong. It wasn't going to work. There wasn't enough economic activity and demand for books, used books in Moscow to pay the bills. Does that make sense? You can save yourself so much hassle by building that business model up front. Okay, now you actually have a business model. You've actually thought through what is it going to take to make this business make money, pay the bills, make sure my wife gets fed, and we can actually have children and maybe go out to dinner once a year. Okay, cool. You're cooking with gas at this point. Fantastic. Now you need to actually start going through the blocking and tackling that is involved in starting to build this business. So you need to go get yourself probably something like an LLC. And this is where the talk is turning incredibly practical. Limited liability company. You need to just create a business to be able to house this activity that you're in. You can get a lawyer to do it in Idaho. It costs $100 to get an LLC. And here are a number of very specific advantages, because I've had young business people be like, you know, I could just, you know, whether it's a consulting business, my brother does a bunch of consulting. He's a brilliant IT person. He builds networks for people. He works for me full time, but also does this stuff on the side. He's like, do I really need an LLC? Like, absolutely. Not only does it limit your liability because it's a company, and so if someone brings a frivolous lawsuit, it is going to be limited to that moment. They're not going to go after your house. They're not going to go after your car. They can only go after the corporation that was doing the work, and that's why you want to create an LLC. Okay, so that's why it's a limited liability company. It's going to save you a lot of hassle on that front. The other reason is just very practical, easier for accounting to be able to measure whether you're doing a good job, and very practical for tax reasons. For my brother, as an example, I'm like, so if you have an LLC and they're paying you $200 an hour to build their network, well, guess what? If you want to buy yourself a new computer, you can have the LLC buy the computer with all the money that they're paying you, and that's a business expense, and now you just got a tax-free computer. And there's lots of other things you can start to put into that LLC, right? And I hate that we live in a world where tax efficiency is actually one of the most important things when it comes to business, But it really is. You need to be figuring out how to not get slaughtered by taxes. And so an LLC or something similar, there's S-Corps and C-Corps and all those things. For most of us, if we're just starting a business, a limited liability company is going to do the trick. It allows you to do the accounting. You got to do K-1s and various other things that make it complicated, but it is worth it. Because, for instance, I just need a new laptop, this one right here. And so one of my buildings that is that I own that generates a ton of rent bought me a new laptop. Well, I just got a tax-free laptop, right? I didn't have to use post-tax money. This was all pre-tax money to buy this laptop, and I don't have to pay taxes on that. And I justified it because I build my Excel models to make sure that my buildings are going to work on this laptop. Fantastic. Well, you think about, even if you're in a 10% tax bracket, if this is a $2,000 laptop, that's $2,000 that I didn't pay taxes on. I just saved myself $200, right? Very practical type of stuff, but it's really important because we live in a very, and 10% would be a win for most of us on the tax bracket. So encourage you. I would encourage you think through building that LLC, putting as much of it in there. Even with all this planning, you might fail at this point, but get over it. You're going to be fine. Okay, now let's talk about funding. Okay, I've got my donut shop. I've actually pushed on all of the assumptions in my model. I've done the pivots necessary to say, okay, I think this is actually going to work. I've built my LLC. Now I'm ready to go. Some businesses, you can just bootstrap. You can just start doing it. But let's say it's as simple as a donut shop. You need the equipment to be able to make donuts. You need to be able to pay rent on the donut place, wherever that's going to be. You need a commercial kitchen. You need batter and flour, all the things that go into donuts. I'm not a donut guy, but I do love donuts. I mean, I eat donuts. I don't make donuts, obviously. So how am I going to fund all of this? Let's say it costs $10,000. Let's say it costs $50,000. Because in your model, you say, look, I'm only going to get 3 new customers a month, and only one of those is going to return every 3 months. Again, this is theoretical, but that's my model. Okay, how much revenue is that going to generate if I have that level of return customers? And then I find, man, return customers are really important. How do I put them on a loyalty program? How do I make sure that they have the best donut eating experience of their entire life so that they tell their friends about it, right? That's where your model forces you to understand what is the most important thing. And in that donut shop, it might be return customers. I need people who love donuts so much that they tell their friends and come back regularly. That's how my business is going to work. Okay, well, that's the most important thing for you. So you need to push on that. Okay, so, but I've got to be able to buy all this equipment so that I can actually start making donuts and I can afford a year of rent because based on those assumptions, I'm not going to generate enough revenue to pay myself and pay rent for a year and a half. Okay, now, how am I going to go out and get investors? It is shocking to me how many people, I had one particular business come to me and they said, we would like $500,000 and we're willing to give you 20% of our business for $500,000. I'm like, okay, so let's run the math on that. If 20% is worth $500,000, okay, you've got yourself, what, $2.5 million business, okay, cool. And they're like, no, our business is probably only worth $500,000. I'm like, okay. So why should I only get 20% if I give you $500,000? They're like, because we would like $500,000. Aha, we've identified a real problem here. You need to understand, you need to show investors how are they going to get a return for the money that they are giving you, okay? Their business, this was a winery actually, generated about $2,000 a year in profit, and they still valued it at $500,000, which is apocryphal, but okay, whatever. And they wanted me to give them $500,000 so that they could grow that business. I am never going to get a return on that investment, right? I'm never going to get that money back. So as a business, say we're going to get back to our donut shop. We're starting our donut shop. Okay, we have all these assumptions. We think it's going to take a year and a half to break even based on the customer acquisition pace that we think we can accomplish. Okay, if we go out and ask someone for $100,000, how are they going to get that money back? So there's a number of different mechanisms that you can use for funding. And I would always encourage you, start with friends and family. Some people don't like that. They say you need to go get a bank loan, which you can. That's an option. You can get an SBA loan. Small Business Administration, SBA loan. You can do that. I think if you can find friends and family who are willing to strap in with you and give you some amount of money that they, with eyes wide open, might lose, you are going to find a level of motivation that's totally different. Because there's going to be those moments, remember we're back in the POW camp, where you're like, why did I start this donut shop? It's not working. There's no way I'm going to be able to make this money. But I took money from grandma. I have to make this work. When you take a friends and family round, it gives you a level of motivation, if you're a good Christian, that is going to help power you through some of those hard times when you are creating a business. So I like to get a friends and family round. You can do it in either debt. You can say, hey, can I borrow $50,000 for my donut shop? I will pay you interest only for the first 5 years, and then I will pay you off in the following 5 years, right? That's an option. Plug that into your model. Make sure that you can actually afford those payments for the first 5 years of interest only and afford those payments for beyond that, right? So that's one option. You can say, I want a pure investment. I want $50,000 for 10% of my business, okay? If that's true, that means you think your business is worth $500,000. Can you look grandma in the face and say, my business, which is just an idea on Excel, is worth $500,000? Eh, probably not. So maybe you need to go back to the loan, right? But you could also say, based on my model, I am going to be break even in a year and a half. I am going to be profitable for the next year and a half. And after 3 years, I should be generating $10,000 a month of profit after I've paid myself. Okay, well, if those assumptions are actually based in reality and they're not these crazy numbers, then honestly, 10% of that business might be really valuable. Because if you're producing $10,000 a month in profit, there's a taco truck in Moscow that produces $10,000 a month in profit after they pay everyone. Like, that is not crazy. That is a thing you can totally do. Okay, so what's worth 10? Well, if I own 10% of that and I'm getting $1,000 a month as just a dividend because I own a piece of this business, and maybe the business continues to grow and it gets to $15,000 or $20,000. Okay, well, I'm getting $2,000 a month from my $50,000 investment back here as a dividend long term because this business is profitable. Well, then you can look grandma in the face and say, no, it will be worth this. And over 10 years, I expect that $50,000 to return $75,000, and then you will continue to get a distribution because you own 10% of my business. And, you know, by the grace of God, we're going to make this a donut empire, and you are going to be strapped in for this thing, right? That's the way you think about funding. That's the way you pitch it to someone, is here's how I'm going to get a return on investment. I'm either going to do it with a debt, like I'm going to pay interest only, then I'm going to pay you back. You've got your money back. You've got interest. Are we good? A lot of people will do that. That's actually a pretty safe thing. I've done that. I've done it for pizza restaurants that have failed miserably. And so you just need to be aware. Don't ask for investment from someone who can't afford it. Like, don't go to them and say, hey, can you sell your car and give me an investment for my donut shop? That is just you being unkind, and unless they're an idiot, they shouldn't do that. So, but go to someone who can afford $50,000 or whatever the number is, and just say, I have a business plan that I think is going to work. Make sense? What we did with Red Balloon is I actually funded the business for the first year plus, just because I wanted to actually gain traction, get it to the scale that I didn't have to give away too much of the business, right? Because if I asked for $1 million when I just had a job board that was making $20 a month, I would have to give away the entire business for $1 million, at least, right? And nobody would even give me that. Whereas if I could fund it for the first year, get it to the point where all of a sudden, oh, we're making $50,000 a month in revenue. Maybe we're not profitable yet, but we've proven the model. We've proven that there's demand. Now I can go out to people and say, this business is worth $5 million. Would you give me $500,000 for 10%, right? And so the longer you can wait till you get that funding for a business like Red Balloon, I'm just giving you practical examples, the longer you can wait, the more the business is worth, which means the less interest ownership you have to give away with that investment. Does that make sense? The other thing you can do is what they call a convertible note, and we actually ended up doing this. Because if, let's say I'm a year into it, and I think the business is worth $3 million, okay? and I need $500,000 or I need $1 million. Well, if I get $1 million, I'm now giving away 33% of my business, right? Does that make sense? Math straightforward. But what I say, if I do a convertible note, I say, guess what? I believe that in 3 years, this business will be worth $10 million. And I need $1 million. Well, now I only have to give away 10% of the business, right, for that $1 million. And I am going to pay you 8% or 10% interest on that $1 million for 3 years. And then at the end of that 3 years, if the business is worth more than $10 million, you buy in for $10 million and you're just totally thrilled. And it's worth less than that, then I'm going to pay you that money back, and I'm going to pay you that money back with interest. Now, that's a risk that I just took on, but guess what? That gives them a lot of security, and I gave away way less of the business, even though the business was not yet worth $10 million. It was maybe only worth $3 million, and I could take $1 million and have it only be 10% of the business. Is this making sense? Sorry, I'm getting a little deep on the math. But it's important because you want to maintain as much ownership as you can in your business while still giving a good deal to people who you are getting money from. Make sense? Okay, so now you've got your why, you've got your great idea, you've got your business model, you've pushed on your assumptions, now you've got some funding in the bank. Now what do you need to focus on? Well, some people, it is merely, I just need to go and execute. I need to go and execute like mad. Sometimes you need to go and start actually hiring people. I will tell you, if you're going into the funding round, you should always have skin in the game, whether that is you're putting in your own money so that you are actually showing that you believe in it enough that you're putting your own money into the game, or you're taking a significant reduction in salary. I always hate it when, and I know a lot of people in the Bay Area have done this, they go to a VC and they say, I need $30 million, whatever it is, and they are not putting any of their money in, and they're giving themselves a fat raise once they get that money, and that is very common. Well, that means you actually don't have skin in the game. You're not in it with those VCs. And guess what? You're now in a relationship with the venture capital people that they are just going to do whatever they can to get the money out of you because they clearly know that you don't care about your business. You don't have a why in any of that. So put skin in the game if you can when you're starting your business. If you can bootstrap your business, that's fantastic. But when I asked people for a convertible note for Red Balloon, it was the first question they had is, have you put in your own money? And the good news is the answer was yes. I've bootstrapped this business with my own money, and I'm not taking a salary, which is a significant contribution to the business as well. Does that make sense? Okay, good. We're doing little check-ins to make sure everyone, and I'm sorry, this one is really important. Okay, now you've got your business, you've started. This is gonna sound really stupid, but I've seen so many businesses fail. They're obsessed with the idea, what they're doing. I will tell you, cash is king. You need to watch your cash flow like a hawk. You need to watch cash coming in. You need to watch how much cash you have in the bank. You need to not be distracted by cool ideas, because lots of people will come to you with cool ideas that involve you giving them money. You need to watch your cash like a hawk. And honestly, this is not my strongest thing. I love big ideas, and then I realize you have to pay for big ideas. But God has blessed that. That's why you sometimes want to find yourself a Timothy to help give you some grounding that like, okay, so you actually have to pay for that, not just do the thing. But cash is king when you're starting a business. You need to start by hiring great people. So if you have a business, you've got your business, it's starting to go, you need to obsess about the people that are in your business. Your business is really the sum total of all the cool people you have. It's not your cool idea. And in this, as Christians, we should understand this. You're managing, you're working with everlasting souls, people who are going to be with you for all eternity and are going to be the face of your business, probably. A lot of people are only going to interact with your employees. Hire very carefully. I've seen many businesses fail because they had a great business idea and then they hired someone because they were drowning. And often, this is how it works. You do it all yourself. Then you're drowning in work because you're making revenue. Fantastic. I need to hire someone. So you go find someone who fogs up a mirror if you put it under their nose and like, okay, they're good. They've got a pulse. They can do it. That is a huge mistake, and I've seen a lot of businesses fail. So a business in California, he hired a $15 an hour gal who was just a terrible experience, and he lost a third of his customer base before he realized what was going on because she was the person that they ended up talking to. He's like, ah, now I've got someone in front of office, so I don't have to worry about it. And she was such a bad experience. He's like, why is my revenue down? Well, these customers wouldn't come back because he had hired the wrong person. You really can nuke yourself by getting the wrong person. And of course, you should be using Red Balloon if you're trying to hire someone. Work ethic. I talked about stamina. You're going to have an incredible work ethic if you have started your own business. It is so easy to think, man, I'm going to crush this thing. It's going to be amazing. And you need to understand it is a lot of work. I have started a lot of businesses, and even with Red Balloon, like, I try and put in my 8 to 10 hours in the office, and then I go home and be present with my kids, and then I pull open the old laptop after I've hung out with everybody, and I'm like, okay, I've got to catch up on all the other things that I need to be doing. It is a lot of work to get a business going. It's not always like that. You're going to get to a point where you have made headway, but it is going to be a lot of work. So now that I've scared you, okay, you now know, here's the steps. Go start yourself a business. Why would you do that? It is, Psalm 95 says, today if you hear his voice, harden not your heart. Today crush your part-time job, right? So you're like, okay, I don't know if I'm ready to start a business. Okay, well, start with where you are right now. Like we talked yesterday, chop the wood that's in front of you. You can have a big vision. You can do those things. But do what's in front of you. Crush your part-time job. Learn how to work your tail off in whatever you're doing right now. Volunteer to do dishes. This is for all you moms out there. You kids, volunteer to do dishes. Be the type of person who goes out and finds the thing that needs to be done and just do that. Because that's the person who's going to be successful at business. Not the person who has the big idea, who wants to go conquer the world. It's the person who sees the work that needs to be done and just does it without even worrying about it. And so good practice is start with dishes. Go volunteer for work that you're not paid for. I'll give you a short story here. I told you my first day at work at MZ. That wasn't the first time Shell, who was one of the economists, had heard of me. When my .com in the Bay Area went out of business, I had some money in the bank, so I'm like, well, I don't know that I wanted to do stuff, but I took a job at the University of Idaho. But I thought, I'm a single guy, I'm 23 years old, I don't need to be playing video games or watching movies. If I have spare time, I should be blessing other people. I happen to be pretty good with technology. So I went to all the nonprofits in town, churches, even churches that I disagreed with, and said, hey, do you want me to help with your IT work? I'll just do it for free because you probably need help. I know how to do this stuff. I'm from California. Now, as a side note, that's a terrible idea. If you're like a nonprofit and a dude walks in and says, hey, can I do your IT work? The answer is no, because that's probably nefarious. But I didn't know that. I'm like, hey, can I build your network for you? Can I build you a backup system? Can I show you how email works? All these things. This is a long time ago, right? Well, I was doing all this work for free. Shell, one of the two economists, they had this little consulting business, calls up the church office, Christ Church, and says, I can't get my printer to work. Do you know anybody who knows how to do that? They're like, well, there's this guy that comes around and just kind of fixes stuff. You should call him. So that's how I got my job. That I turned into a business that was worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay? So that's my encouragement to you. Go do work. It is a lot easier to steer a boat that's moving than one that's sitting at dock waiting for the great opportunity to come along. So if you're a young person, go do stuff. If no one wants to pay you to do stuff, find stuff to do for free and just go do it. And that's how you're actually going to learn so much about how to start a business, is when you're out just doing things. And it could be cleaning people's houses, it could be fixing fences, it could be raking leaves, whatever it is, go out and work as unto the Lord with the little things you have right now, and you are going to do a lot better. Proverbs 22:29 says, do you see a man who excels in his work? Will he not stand before unknown men. So excel in your work. Do the things that are in front of you right now. Have that big, ambitious vision, and you're going to go a long way. That is what God uses to bless his people. That's what God uses to bless this city. And there are huge benefits to owning businesses, right? I've been talking about all the hard things that are involved in owning a business. But once you own a business, It is an incredible way to generate wealth. It is an incredible way to generate wealth that goes way beyond any job you could ever have. My brother-in-law was a sales rep, and he was a very good salesperson, but he told me I couldn't make more than $500,000 a year in sales, so I thought I'd start a business. And then he made a lot more than $500,000 a year, right? So businesses are a way to generate wealth that goes way beyond you, right? You look at businesses out there, Google, Apple, creating billions of dollars of free cash flow. And obviously they're publicly traded businesses. You can't just use that money, but businesses generate wealth at an unprecedented ability, and that's how we build cathedrals. That's how we build schools. I was actually at a conference a week and a half ago or whatever it was in D.C., and we were talking to the Heritage Foundation and Herzog and all these people, because I'm on the ACCS board, about how do we actually shoot the public school system in the head and just finish that sucker, right? I'm sorry, I just said it out loud. Maybe you want to get that out of the recording. But we're like, okay, so practically how do we do that? Well, guess what? If we do that, even if we incrementally get there, we need 500,000 seats for students in classical Christian schools within the next 5 years. Holy moly. Like, think about that. That is an incredibly big vision, and it's going to take an incredible amount of capital. We're like, well, we're going to need to raise a lot of money to do that. I talked to this really cool organization in Pennsylvania, and Red Balloon's helping them with some hiring. And they have, I'm trying to remember, I want to say it's Convoy of Blessing or Blessing of Convoy, anyway. Blessing of Hope, maybe, that's it. There it is, yes. So they're like, hey, we have taken, when farmers have extra food, we're going to, instead of throw it away, we're going to make sure that we can get it to homeless people, because we think that the church should be helping people with food, not the government, right? Okay, so then they sat down, they're like, but what if we want to make a real dent in this? Like, what if we actually want to replace 10% of the welfare system in America because we think the church should be responsible for that? And so they sat down, they're like, okay, so we need to raise $10 billion. And they're like, okay, let's go get a fundraiser. Let's get to work. Like, that should, like, that's scary. But they're like, well, why not? Like, there are organizations out there that have raised $10 billion. Why not us? And we're actually doing something good. We're trying to get something bigger, right? And so business is a way to generate an enormous amount of wealth, and it's going to be business people that give that $10 billion. It's not going to be someone who has a $100,000 a year job or even a $200,000 a year job. That's not going to generate the type of wealth that's going to change society at that scale. So that's the first thing. You're going to make a ton of money when you've done this. Because I wanted to end with a positive. Like, business is hard. You should do it because you're going to be obedient. You're going to be faithful. You're going to be ambitious. That's good. But there are huge benefits. There's an enormous amount of wealth that can be generated from owning a business. There also, and we talked about, I think it's, you know, maybe even the title of this talk, For the Good of Our City. When I was the CEO of MZ, the mayor of Moscow would regularly ask me out to lunch and be like, hey, Andrew, I'd love to get your take on this or that in our community. We talked about, you know, what the business makers are doing, where you're actually having a voice into the political world. Business leaders who have gone through the enormous effort of creating businesses and having those businesses be successful are going to be well-respected in your community, and that is going to give you a voice as a Christian out into your community that you would not have if you had not started that business, right? I hate to tell you, if you are just doing a job and you're a worker and you're getting a salary, you don't have the same respect as the CEO or an entrepreneur who has started a thing and done a thing. That's just the way it is. And we want Christians to be seen as people who are doing things that are really big and audacious faithfully, right? And when we do that, what do you think is going to happen? People are going to notice. People are like, oh, I want to hang out with those people. Like, not just because they have fancy cars or big houses. I want to hang out with those people because they're doing stuff. And politicians are going to pay attention to Christians who are doing things at that scale. I've had a chance to meet a lot of politicians who actually cared somewhat, maybe not that much, maybe they were just telling me that, they cared somewhat about my opinion because of what I've done in business. So not only are you going to generate a lot of wealth so that we can make a lot of churches and a lot of schools and faithful kids, but you're also going to have a huge political impact in your community, in your city, when you go through this hard work of creating a business. It is hard, And if it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. But there's an opportunity for us to be way more ambitious than we ever thought we'd be before. Have a plan. Don't go into it naively. Make sure you know what you're doing. But then just get after it. This is the moment we have. The economy is ready for Christians to do stuff. And I think you should. Thank you very much. Stripes together. Yes.
So you talk a lot about starting a business, which is great. 100% love the idea and great for the young guys. Some of us might have access to a little bit of capital and we might be interested in buying a business.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit, the contrast between the two, and maybe, you know, there's also my understanding outside looking in from the business world itself, owner side. Is there a difference between founders and those that run a business? Different mentalities, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And can you maybe speak to that? I mean, it's kind of a mishmash of a question, but different stages of life.
Yeah.
You know, just starting a business when you're young versus maybe buying a business and
yep.
The modes of that.
Well, you'll notice this is a theme for, you should start by reading a book. There's a book, Buy, Don't Build. It's just about buying businesses. There are 12 million baby boomers who own businesses that are probably going to sell them in the next 15 years. So there are going to be 12 million small businesses, HVAC companies, donut shops, that are going to be for sale that already have gone through the pain and agony of that startup phase and are now in a spot where they can go and succeed. And we've seen this in Moscow. Both of the glass companies, Moscow Glass and whatever the other one is, have both bought by people in Christchurch, and now all the we're like a glass, you know, monopoly for Moscow. The Castle Carpet Cleaning, the electrician who started his business as an electrician, got successful, bought the carpet cleaning company in Moscow, and is now generating more cash, generating more jobs. Right, and these are, you know, back to porta potty businesses. These are not exciting businesses. But they're very successful businesses. I think you just need to make sure you fund it right and build it correctly and structure the deal well, right? And we know in real estate, buying at the right price makes the deal successful or not successful, no matter what you do. It's the same thing for businesses. You just need to buy it correctly. I would agree that there are very few people who can be that entrepreneur who get a business going and then run a scaled business. Generally, those are different people. I was only able to pull that off because I surrounded myself with good people who could tell me my crazy ideas needed to stop.
Buying a business is largely a way to save time because the early stages of starting tend to consume a lot of time. The main thing I would say to watch out for, other than what Andrew mentioned, is culture. So I've seen many, I do M&A for a living, what will often take a business that's bought out, why it won't succeed, is it has deep cultural problems. And sometimes baby boomers have not created great cultures in businesses. And so if there isn't a good work ethic and there's all kinds of weird politics and backbiting, so you can't really fix those problems usually. Well, the business is dead by the time you have. So that's kind of the one caution I would have on buying something is make sure it's being run pretty well. I mean, it doesn't have to be that the economics were brilliant, but at least at a cultural level.
And there's sometimes a reason they're selling the business, because they see something that they think they can hide from you, and if they can just sell it, they can be out before the problem actually hits. So you just need to be aware of those things. Do your due diligence. Red Balloon, we just acquired militaryhire.com, and we basically built a backup plan into it, right? Of like, well, it's the business model should do this, but if it doesn't do this, here's how we're going to still make it cash flow and return that $500,000 investment, right? So you need to, this is back to those Excel models, spend some time. What do they say? Neeson Taleb says the worst case scenario is the only one that matters. And if you can live with the worst case scenario, then you should do it. How about that? I can unpack that if you want. Yeah. Do you want to start on that one?
Sure. I mean, if you own a business, then paying yourself in wage, salary, guaranteed payments, whatever, and distributions from the business are one and the same. So really, I think the question there is, how do you balance reinvesting in the business, growth of the business, and so on, versus what you take out? I think it comes back to have a plan for it. So it's not... paradoxically, a blessing to customers to charge them too little. That's probably the thing business owners struggle with most. But if you charge your customers too little, you're telling them you're not worth much and you're not being worth much. If you're stressed out of your mind, you can't pay your bills, you can't hire people, you're not doing a great job for your customers. So often in business, you need to be charging more than you think, and that's a blessing for your customers. More we could say there. But that's where I would start to make sure that the business is in fact solid. And then, well, what do you take out, what do you leave in? Usually, a business owner will make more money investing in the business than anything else he might do, because it's the thing he knows. If you're investing in someone else's business, there's always stuff you don't know. There's stuff being hidden, intentionally or otherwise. Not so with your own business. You know everything. So really it comes down to, I would always encourage a business owner to give his family, it shouldn't be that the family suffers because of dad owning a business. So that would be kind of the litmus test, is you pay the bills, dry and warm house and all those things. But after that, reinvesting in a business is usually the priority.
But also don't feel bad about when the business is wildly successful, taking a bunch of money, and then you can give a ton of money, right? And then, like, it's okay to be wealthy. And Christians also, this is back to that ambition thing, like, there's a godly way to be wealthy. Money can be a wicked master, but as long as you are master over your money, you can do really cool things with a lot of money. You know, we talk about building churches and schools and all those other things. Generally, that means that you've taken a ton of money out of your successful business and now you're doing stuff with it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I probably look at 100 businesses a year or so, so this is very generic, but if you're a services business, then you want a profit margin generally in the 10 to 20% range. If you're more in the software, high tech, high-end services, you should be shooting more in the 30-40 range. Usually running a business over a 40% margin is not helpful for various reasons. So if that's where your bottom line needs to be and you're efficient in spending and structured sensibly, like there's not some glaring problem in how work is being done, then the answer to your question is top line. What does revenue have to be for that to be true? You know, maybe you're investing in growth, so that makes a difference for a season, but the core economics, that's how I answer the question. So the how much do people undercharge? I mean, most businesses I've gone into that have been around for any number of years are under by 10 to 50%. I went into one business, we quadrupled prices, so it can be crazy.
Yeah. Necessarily interested in the Christian worldview. I was curious about how that worked out.
I'll be honest, I just found buyers and then I just did whatever I wanted. on the Christian worldview. And I was just like, this is what I'm doing. Like, where I'm making you a ton of money, you're going to fire me? What are you going to do? And so it was more of that. I would not recommend that because I got lucky enough to find people who cared more about economics than culture until 2020 hit. And then I found people who switched, and all of a sudden they cared more about culture than economics, and I lost my job. So I would recommend, and so for Red Balloon, I did not get any investors that I did not completely see eye to eye with on worldview, whether they're elders at our church or elders at other churches or people who I just like, look, I have a business that is fight in the culture war, at the front of the culture war. You need to know what you're investing in, and I'm not going to change what I'm doing. Generally, I would invest, get values-aligned investors, if at all possible. I was fortunate that that wasn't a problem because we didn't.
How do you balance the time you owe your family and the time?
Always tricky, right? Because you can say, well, the more time I spend with my kids, the better my kids are going to be. But if they see their dad being lazy and not actually throwing his back into things, that's also teaching them, but it's teaching them something else, right? I'll pick on business travel. And so it is a balancing act, and there's different stages of life, right? When I had lots of small kids, it was very different than when I have larger children, they can actually come with me on these trips, right? But for me, there was a swath of years where I'm like, my goal is no more than 3 nights away a month for business travel, and upwards of 5, especially if I'm going internationally, because it's very hard to go to England and only be away for 3 nights, right? I needed to pick that goal before the trips came up, and what it ended up being is it ended up being a blessing, because then I would pick trips that were only the most important and didn't spend business travel money on trips that I didn't need to go on, because I had this family rule that was driving my behavior on that front. I had a rule, always home for dinner. Like, no matter how busy I am, I'm gonna be home for dinner, I'm gonna be around the dinner table, and then it may be that I need to get back to work and I need to go pull an all-nighter because I spent 2 hours hanging out with the kids, hearing stories of their life. That's just the way it is. So you need to pick rules, you need to talk about it with your wife. But if those rules look like it looks more like just a 9-to-5 job, and anything beyond that, everyone's getting frustrated. Well, you need to maybe look, you know, is there something else here? Because it's not going to look like that. And you're teaching your kids how to work hard because they're watching their parents all the time, right? And there are seasons when you have to work crazy, and there are seasons when I'm going to, you know, work 15-hour days for a season, and then I'm going to take a week vacation and just really hang out with the kids and just be intentional about that. Anything to add?
One of the realities of the fall and the curse is enmity between the man and his wife. And so one of the things I would say is be straight up about that is the curse. And don't fail as a businessman to lead your wife. If work and wife are at enmity because you haven't dealt with the thinking through the fall and how you're going to redeem what will otherwise be enmity, then you will always have the enmity and you're just managing cancer. So to get beyond wife and work enemies, you got to man up and lead in your home.
Yeah, just talk about it. Yeah.
For the deals you talked about, like your convertible note or taking on debt or equity, how do you find the attorneys to structure those documents, or did you work off templates yourself?
I found an attorney. Generally, the dollar amounts are too big to not do it right. And with the SEC or maybe whoever is in charge of those stock exchange and so on and so forth, you want to cross your T's and dot your I's. So we have a great M&A attorney in town who happens to also be a deacon or an elder at one of the churches in Moscow. But I've used a variety of attorneys. I mean, one of the times I sold the business, we spent $250,000 on attorneys. Just to make sure everything was correct, and it was a stack of paper like this. So it's complicated selling businesses, and it'd be better to do it right. When we bought Military Hire, which is, you know, like a $500,000 transaction, we probably spent $15,000 on lawyers, so it doesn't have to be crazy, but you definitely need to make sure that you've done it right. The other thing that's nice, it's like, sometimes when I buy a building, even if I had the cash to just buy it outright, I'll use a bank loan. The reason is, the bank is going to make me do due diligence because they're providing this money that I might be tempted to ignore. And they're going to make me do the environmental thing. And like, oh, guess what? You're going to have a huge problem with this. They're going to make me do these things that I would have been like, ah, because I'm a little bit of a laissez-faire guy. Like, everything's going to be fine. It's going to be amazing. And the bank's like, it's not going to be amazing. You have to do these things. And so they force that. Well, a lawyer in a lot of these deals is going to be like, okay, so what are you going to do about this? I'm not going to worry about it. No, you are going to worry about that because that's going to be a problem. So I would always recommend having a lawyer if you're buying or selling a business, even if you have someone who's done some experience at it before. So agree, disagree?
I agree. I'd also just say manage them closely because
yes.
You can spend five times as much on a deal and get very little extra. So saying, I don't want you to burn 200 hours with your information security group reviewing stuff that I'm not actually worried about anyway can
yeah.
save a lot of money.
That's true.
Couple more questions.
Yep. You're just costing yourself time generally on that, right? You know, you look at some businesses, the amount of investment is really just going to have a direct correlation to how long it is until you're profitable. And what you're doing is you're just delaying a little bit. You should, there's ways to do wait lists where you're getting market intelligence. Do people actually want this product? You're trying to achieve product market fit, right? The market wants my product, fantastic. And if a wait list is a way to give you information on that, that's great. You also just need to look at the business, like how long is it going to take me to deliver this? If I'm getting a wait list for a product that's gonna take a year and a half, that's just unkind to customers. If it's like, oh, I'm getting a wait list and I should have this a month after I hit 100 customers. Oh, well, that's actually not that bad and you can have constant communication with them. So it really depends on the business, whether that's a good strategy or not. And the primary goal of that should be knowledge, not avoidance of risk necessarily. It does avoid risk, and knowledge is avoidance of risk. But the goal of that is knowledge. Jeff Bezos says there's a direct correlation between the success of a business and their pace of experimentation. So how fast are you actually running experiments and learning about what the market wants? That's going to have a direct correlation to the success of your business.
The only thing I'd add is that pitching people and selling them will give you better knowledge than posing a hypothetical. So if I say, who would want a chicken sandwich if I had one, you'll all raise your hand probably, but whether you actually are willing to buy it when I have it is different. If I set up a table out there with chicken sandwiches and try and flog them to you on the way out, I'll learn a whole lot more. So that's just the knowledge is the goal. So if you could sell somebody else's product to start with, that would get you way better findings than selling a hypothetical.
Yeah, I mean, you can be competitive. Like, we all played sports. We were trying to beat the other team. And we weren't, like, it wasn't vengeful or vindictive unless there was some rivalry and you probably had sin in your heart in the process. You're trying to win. You're trying to beat the other team. And business is like, I want a monopoly, so I want every other conservative job board to give up and sell their assets to me because Red Balloon is out-executing everybody. Right? That's okay, and I can still be friends with those people, but there's nothing wrong with having that competitive drive to I want to win, And if they're leaving stuff on the table, that's step one. Step two is taking the stuff they already have because I'm going to be better at it. Because I have better customer service, I work harder, I execute harder. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I'm going to win at this. Be competitive.
I think we'll finish with that. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Great.